Committee will come to order. Let the record show, the time is 1:40. Present is Senator French, Senator Huggins, Senator Terrio is on his way. And for business today, we have, we'd like to welcome Commissioner Barton here to give us our overview. And the intent today is essentially to sort of establish a baseline as the committee proceeds throughout the year and we start looking at the comprehensiveness of programs and challenges and financing and all the other things that can come before us, that we all have about the same baseline watermark, if you will, as we go forward. So with that, Commissioner Barton. Almost got you elected.
I wouldn't wish that on anyone. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Barton, Commissioner DOT. We have today just a departmental overview. The package looks formidable, but some of these we won't spend hardly any time on. We could start, Nancy. Oh, let me introduce the herd I have with me. Take questions. Frank Richards, who is our statewide maintenance and operations engineer. John Manley, whom you all know, is some acute. Jeff Otteson, our director of program management. Nancy Slagle, our director of administrative services. And I think John McKinnon, the deputy commissioner for roads and facilities. And Kip Knudsen, Deputy Commissioner for Aviation, are on the line somewhere.
Whom do we have on the line this time?
Hold on here. We've got, okay.
Kip Knudsen and John McKinnon are here in Anchorage.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining us, and feel free to speak up as required.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. We're going to go through, these are the topics. Major topics to cover this afternoon. The mission of the department, you can see, is to provide for the movement of people and goods and the delivery of state services. Geographically, we're organized this way. The central region is headquartered in Anchorage, the northern in Fairbanks, and southeast in Juneau. The red line is the boundary. We have 84 maintenance stations scattered across the state. Some are a little more accessible than others. We have 2,100 miles of the national highway system, 1,500 miles of the Alaska highway system. We have 258 state-owned airports, including Fairbanks and Anchorage, 47 state-owned harbors. 21 are operated by agreements with local governments. The marine highway system, 33 ports of call from Bellingham to Dutch, and covering 3,500 miles with 10 vessels. We're organized in a modal organization in the headquarters, Deputy Commissioner for Highways and Public Facilities, a Deputy Commissioner for Aviation, and a Deputy Commissioner for Marine Operations, and then the three regions, Northern, Southeast, and Central.
If I might, Commissioner Barton, do our vessels have, I was just down at the Homeland Security brief, do we have the tracking devices on our maritime vessels?
We track those vessels. I'm not sure whether they're the same as they're talking about with Homeland Security.
Right.
I know that's under discussion. Deputy Commissioner Briggs couldn't be with us today. He's in Ketchikan. I'm sure he has an answer to that, but we'll get back to you with that.
Let me ask it another way. Electronically, can we see where the vessels are?
Yes, we can.
Okay, so we can track them.
Yes.
All right, got it.
As I indicated, we're organized modally in the headquarters, and we're intermodal, integrated in the regions. And I'd be happy to discuss that at length. But that was a change that Governor Murkowski initiated. Some of the challenges facing us, first is the basic funding of the highway system. The highway bill is still stalled in Congress, and you could read these, preserving and protecting the infrastructure, some major projects, implementation of Southeast Plan, Marine Highway System configuration, and then construction of both international airports, and finally recruiting and retaining staff. This is a critical item for us. 25% of our employees are eligible to retire in the next 5 years, and we're already having a hard time recruiting replacements. 15 to 19% of our recruitments have been unsuccessful already. On the operations side, we'll be discussing those items as we go through here. The operating budget by source, you can see on the screen, not much of it is, about a quarter of it's direct general fund, a little more than a quarter. The rest comes from these various sources, and there's general fund and some of these other sources, such as Marine Highway Fund. About half of that is general fund.
Under international airports?
Yes.
Is that only Anchorage, this international airport?
Anchorage and Fairbanks.
Okay. And in that revenue, I've been told that Fairbanks receives some revenue based on business done in Anchorage. Is that accurate?
Well, we operate those airports as a system, and we'll get into that
later on.
We can talk about that, but there is obviously more business at Anchorage than there is at Fairbanks. Our general fund and receipt supported services by function, that this is where it's going, in other words. And I think the message to take away from this chart is about 90% of it's going into maintenance and operations. This is our maintenance funding by regions, the three regions we saw earlier. You can see Northern Region gets quite a large share of that. Of course, they have the most lane miles to take care of. If you look at this slide, the message here is that this slide begins in fiscal 83 and is essentially flat. It's just now ticking up, and we hope to tick it up a little more this year. But you know, you put inflation on top of that, and that's pretty sad when you think about the amount of construction that this state has done in that 20-year period. It needs maintained, and yet the money is essentially the same for the last 20 years. A few maintenance item changes in the next budget. I would particularly invite your attention to the Dalton and the Parks corridor maintenance. We really want to beef that up, particularly with Dalton, since it's sort of the bloodline for the state.
And that's included under Roads to Resources?
There are projects in there for Roads to Resources. From the Roads Resource Package, there's also increased maintenance from the normal maintenance and operating budget. There's quite a bit of money that will go into the vault for sure. This is the federal money that gets used for maintenance, 05 and 06. We didn't have the opportunity to participate in dealing with three disasters this year. We normally, that's about average for us, 2 to 3 a year. But there was the Nome storm in October. We took out the road and also took out the state office building. The road has been temporarily repaired and is passable, and the permanent repairs will get done this spring. Similarly with the building, it's now reoccupied, of course. The Delta Junction flooding in May last last year. Some of the worst flooding in a long time. DOT helped deal with that situation. Last summer's fires, DNR, of course, was the lead on that, but they asked us to help deal with a number of them, and you can see we provided trucks, dozers, loaders, water trucks. That was an exciting time for all of us, but particularly for DNR. They did a great job. The airports, there's 258 total, two internationals, 21 certificated, and the remainder are community airports. The Alaska International Airport System includes both Anchorage and Fairbanks. It's operated as an enterprise fund. The operating costs and the capital costs that aren't paid for by the federal funds are paid for by the airlines using that airport, or either airport. Total budget of around $60 million, another $45 in capital. Anchorage is the number one cargo airport in North America. Lake Hood is one of the busiest float plane bases in the world. And the airport is a huge economic engine, not only for Anchorage, but for the entire state. We serve about 5 million passengers a year there, and there's about 58 airlines currently operating there. Fairbanks is the 13th largest cargo port in the U.S. Have a great deal of general aviation there, and have 15 airlines currently operating at the airport with about 900,000 passengers a year.
Commissioner Bart, before you go to the Marine Highway, there's a proposed expansion rental car garage, for lack of a better term. Do you have a play in that?
Yes, we do. The proposal I'm familiar with, at least, would be built on the airport property.
Right.
And they would lease the ground from the airport to build it. The airport would receive fees as a result of the ground lease, as well as fees from the operating revenues that the car rental agency would receive. That's a standard practice.
And you're generally supportive of that?
Generally, I mean, we need to work out some details, and Mark Plum, the airport director, has been working with the proponents to do that.
Right. Are you confident that the revenues that we receive from that will offset the cost?
Well, the cost will be privately borne.
Right.
Cost to the airports will be very visible. The developer and the car rental agencies that will bear most of the cost. I'm not sure how the maintenance of the facility is going to be set up. But they may have that all worked out. I'm just not sure.
Yeah, okay. Let the record show that Senator Terrio has joined us.
The Marine Highway, as I indicated earlier, 3,500 miles, 33 ports of call, carried about 300,000 passengers last year, about 91,000 vehicles. It was designated a scenic byway in 2002. And we have online now, in revenue service, now the new Fast Eagle Ferry Fairweather, which was the first Fast Eagle Ferry built in the United States. And that went into service last June, a very fine vessel. And its top speed, 32 knots, about twice what the other vessels operate at right now, or it's tied up in Ketchikan as a result of some differences with the labor unions. But the bottom two bullets there are pretty significant. Fuel costs are about 15% of the total operating budget for the Marine Highway. Labor about 66%. The fast vehicle ferry concept would just about drop those numbers around. Most of that expense of that vessel isn't fuel. It's operated as a day boat, 12 hours a day, doesn't run 24 hours, 7 days a week, and thus requires a lot less labor. Ports and harbors, 47 of them, DOT is responsible for 21. Of those 47 are operated by local governments on agreements. We have transferred 62 facilities over the years to local ownership, and that's an ongoing program. We would like to transfer those harbors to local ownership where the receiving entity has the capability of operating and maintaining them. As I recall, when it's all over with, there'll probably be about 22 that would remain in state ownership. But we bring them up to a specified standard, and at that time then the local communities take them over. It's been a successful program and generally well received. A little known function of DOT is measurement standards and commercial vehicle enforcement. These are the people that see to it that the trucks are safe on the roads, brakes, etc. Drivers are not being overworked, if they're not overweight, or if they are, they have the proper permitting. But above and beyond that, they also ensure that when you go buy a pound of hamburger, you get one. And so they're just silently working away for all of us. Don't really get a lot of recognition, but they're a good group and well respected.
Under overweight vehicles, what kind of, you can get a permit to have an overweight vehicle?
Yes, yeah, you can. I mean, not on a trip basis, on a routine basis.
Okay.
And in fact, that's how a lot of stuff got up to Greeley last week.
Right. There's been a floating issue about overweight vehicles and who gets a ticket, and I'm told that generally speaking has been resolved at this point to most user satisfaction.
I've heard the same thing.
Okay.
I don't know how accurate that is, but there has been some concern about that, yes, and there is a bill under consideration now that deals with that subject. It revolved around the issue of whether the driver was responsible right. Or the owner, the shipping company, was responsible. And there are arguments for both sides of that issue.
Sure, absolutely. It's about if you drive the vehicle, you go to a weigh station, but you're seeking somebody to guarantee the way you drive the weigh station, so the driver gets the ticket. And he's receiving it as weighed at 20,000, it's really 25,000.
On the capital programs, those are the subjects that...
Let's go back to that real quick to make sure. If I might, just for anyone's information that's interested here, we have two off-site committee meetings. One is going to be in Wasilla on February the 26th to talk about the Kinnickarm Crossing. The other is proposed for March the 4th, is that right, Debbie? At the International Airport to take a close look and hear the information up front on site at the International Airport for obvious implications so that whatever we do here that it come as close to getting the right answer as possible. So that's where we sit on that. The one at the airport is being coordinated, so that's not a done deal yet.
Good. Well, we look forward to those, Mr. Chairman. We like right answers, too. Current construction by modes, you can see there the number of contracts The bottom two, one is the Anchorage Airport, the second is the Fairbanks Airport. In the next slide, you can see the same display, only with dollar values. And this is the 2005 program.
This is actual dollars allocated, or?
Yes. Go back to that.
And give us an example, like at the international airport, what sort of things are we talking about?
Taxiway rehabilitation. In the case of Fairbanks, they just installed some hard stands for de-icing stations,
right.
Two de-icing stations for cargo carriers. Runway work, lighting. It's a myriad of projects. I don't know if we have a list here, but we could.
It's on the next slide, Commissioner.
Pardon?
It's on the next slide.
Oh. On the next slide, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
There it is. You might note under the Anchorage Airport down towards the bottom, the residential sound insulation program. That's a program which houses within a 65 decibel contour and gets soundproofing. Okay. Any more questions?
That's good.
Go ahead, Nance. This infamous step. This is the document by which federal monies get allocated for capital construction projects. It's developed every 3 years and revised every 2 years, and I'm not sure the logic of all that, and there's some interest in Congress in changing that. The main message that you ought to carry away from this slide is the STIP is fiscally constrained. We can only put on there projects that total up to what we expect to get through the federal formula process.
And I believe that there's some anticipation for the STIP process to change, or the title, or combination. Is that true or false?
We're trying to simplify it. There's a slide coming up that your eyes will glaze over about this.
Right, gotcha.
The various funding categories within the STIP, all the projects are classified into one of these four categories. The current STIP is a product of an unusual year in 64, or 64, 04, excuse me. As I indicated earlier, the highway bill has not been reauthorized. The money dribbled out in five different appropriations in 04. It was at least two reductions during the year in the amount that we were to get, or ultimately got. And it's a hard way to run a program. And Congressman Young and Senator Murkowski worked very, very hard to get the highway bill through last year. And we just weren't able to do it. Too many controversial issues. In 2005, the appropriations process replaced some of the funds that they lost in 2004. But the delays didn't hit equally across the state. In other words, it wasn't just a certain percentage applied to all projects. It depended on the type of money. And again, in five now, we've only gotten 8/12 of the money we expect to get in 05. So it's been a bit tricky in managing the program. Our managers have worked hard to try to cushion the shock of all this in terms of impacts on the public, impacts on the contractors. And it's done probably too good a job, actually across the country. And that's kind of relieved the pressure on the bill, frankly.
But in the macro, in 05, you expect to get more money than 04 based on some of that being rolled forward?
We do.
Right.
And then 06 is a complete unknown.
Right.
This is the slide that I was referring to in terms of High Glacier. But this is the STIP process, and this is the simplified version. We took the existing STIP process and actually simplified it some. But you can see all the steps that we go through in developing the STIP. And it wears the public out, it wears us out, and I think it just wears everybody out. But this is the federal process for STIP development. You can see the little balloon down here on the two bottom step boxes. That's where we are right now. In fact, the STIP just went, Amendment 8 just went to federal highways last week.
Right. Now, where does Amendment 8, it normally happens in December?
Well, the amendments can happen at any time, but this was caused by all this problem last year. I don't know, Jeff, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it basically is a reflection of what happened last year. All the projects that were delayed last year, we had to then program them out for this year using that replacement money we gave the Congress. This is a reflection of the funny money situation we had last year.
So it's an aberration, isn't it?
Very much so. It's the most unusual year our 30-year veterans have ever seen.
Senator Donnie Olson has joined us. Donnie, you'll come up here so you can see better if your eyes are as bad as mine. It helped. Yeah, thanks. We appreciate it. Glad to have you with us.
Thanks for coming up.
Feel free to ask questions as we go along.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So at any rate, we'd be glad to go into detail on any one of those boxes that you care to talk about. Okay, moving right along, are the Metropolitan Planning Organizations. We have two in the state, and these are required under federal law. And these organizations, one is in Anchorage, AMATS, and the other is in Fairbanks, FMATS. And these organizations plan transportation expenditures or highway expenditures and transit within their geographic boundaries, except for bridges and the national highway system, and those are reserved to the department. But there, the idea is that the local folks know better than anybody else what their needs are.
At that 50,000 figure, Fairbanks has just joined his fraternity, right? What other organized areas are on the brink?
I don't know if the Valley is or not.
It's a combination of population, 50,000 threshold, and the density of that population, all as determined by the Census Bureau. So every 10 years after the Census Bureau publishes all the regions of the state or the country that are now eligible to become an MDO.
Well, it's a 10-year cycle.
So every 10 years that additional metropolitan areas are created following the 10-year census.
And from your perspective, this is a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing, but it's messy, there's no doubt about it. I think the thing you need to take away from is that the MPO is making all programming decisions for roads within their region, regardless of ownership. So there's a lot of state roads that they're making decisions on, and except for the NHS and bridges.
These are funded by a formula that has been developed that I think Anchorage is, or AMAS is reported with 45 million. Range in FMAS is 14, 15.
Yes.
And is this the cause and effect of the Anchorage lawsuit?
Well, the membership is, and the changes that the legislature wanted to make in the membership and enacted the bill last year, Senate 260, changes the membership for the AMAS.
AMAS, right.
And that's what precipitated the lawsuit, I guess, my biggest.
Okay.
AMAS is, you can see the membership there and the boundary. Five members and the central region director is the chair. You go to the next slide, is FMAS. That's a seven-member board. There's two municipalities in the borough and Walzira. That's one of the larger membership. And the northern region director is the chair of that one. Quickly, you can see the construction funding for northern region by year. What's happened to that? The next slide is southeast. Marine Highway system construction, and then central region by year. Remembering as you look at these that the main budget is flat. In 05, we expect the federal highway funding to be about the same as last year, a little higher. The aviation program, though, is a real success story. It's been increasing for the last few years, and hopefully it will continue to increase, although in the president's budget, he has reduced it by about 15%. I hope Congress will reflect on that and at least maintain it. You can see projects by region.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, yes, Commissioner Barton, when you talk about the aviation program, what are you specifically talking about? Are you just talking about facilities and airports?
I'm talking about the AIP program.
Okay.
The airport improvement
program. Okay, so you're not talking about Capstone and things like that?
No.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Barton, do you have any further information on the business of contracting in communities and state contracts, in this case, airports specifically, what brings it to mind, and taxation at the local level? You and I had a little conversation about that previously. You have any more information on that?
No, I don't have any more information this time. We have the governor's transportation initiatives. They've laid on the table. You can see some of the projects here. The congestion relief package is $108 million, and the access to resources, the roads to resources, is $37 million. That includes a number of projects on the Dalton and projects that are aimed at getting ready for gas pipeline construction. The Richardson Highway, the Elliott Highway bridges are both are in that category, as are some of the congestion relief projects in Anchorage that will also contribute to that. The Glen Burgaw intersection, for example.
We're going to take a closer look at some of those items today.
Not today, but we can.
Okay.
And I'm sure you're going to want to, you know, look at the whole package at some point. We'll be glad to come down and work with you on that.
Yes. Would you just, for sake of conversation information, characterize the Dalton Highway piece?
Well, there's some projects are aimed at improving the surface of the Dalton. It's not in very good shape, but I drove it last fall. And some of that involves getting gravel up there and ready and on, and some of it stockpiled for future use. Some of it is dealing with drainage improvements. We have a couple places where drainage needs redesign and some other places where culverts are just collapsing. And that's the type of project that's going to go on in the Dalton.
And the time schedule for a project like that?
Some of that will start next summer, assuming that it all passes through the legislature. Some of it will be the following summer.
On that point, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, you're starting as far as resurfacing and some of the other upgrades that are going to be with the Dalton Highway. Are you doing the whole Dalton Highway?
No, not the whole highway, but the worst pieces. And some of it is in pretty good shape.
Clear all the way to Prudhoe Bay.
Yeah, it's sectioned all along the road from
top
Live and Good to Prudhoe.
Thanks. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Frank.
Thank you. Commissioner, on the first list on the Governor's Transportation Initiative, can you just give me a couple of sentences to describe the Cordova Copper River Highway project and the Stampede Road project?
Sure. The Copper River project is resurfacing from Cordova to the airport, rebuilding, reconstructing that pavement. That pavement's been down since 1966. And if you drive it, it's like a washboard. It really is in tough shape from the standpoint of just being wavy and so forth. So that normally, if we get 15 years out of the pavement, 15, 20 years, that's doing pretty good. Some pieces of the rich are 30 years. But that's that project. Stampede Road, we're still internally debating what that project should look like. Well, one school has it that will rebuild the first 8 miles out of the 8 mile lake, put in a parking area there at 8 mile lake. The other school is that we ought to just take that money and go further west with it, not building a standard road, but just more of a pioneer road.
Are there I've never been on the Stampede Road. Are there bridges across the rivers there?
Well, that's one reason why the 8 mile project will stop where it does, because there is a bridge needed just beyond that. That's correct.
In either event, are you envisioning bridges, or is it something where you'd leave folks to get across the rivers and then continue on the Pioneer Road?
That's a particular interest to me. I suggested that we ought to look at fords. Now, I don't know whether the bed load, size of bed load.
You said, I'm sorry?
Fords, driving through the river, and
right,
providing an improved driving surface on the bottom of it. River. And I don't know whether the water's too deep, whether the bed load is too big and moves too much to afford to be used, but I would like to not get into signature bridges on that road and just do as much as we need to minimally.
Why don't we take a trip up there this spring and take a look?
Let's do it.
All right.
Is there good fishing up there?
I'm not supposed to say that on the record, Mr. Chairman.
The Glen Highway Corridor, yeah. Could you talk us through that very quickly?
And I'm speaking from memory now. That involves an interchange with the Gaw and Glen intersection. We're going to put a $30 million interchange in that. It will take the Gaw over the Glen and eliminate the current bottleneck there. We think that will help move truck traffic out of the port, as well as help move commuters to the valley and back. There's more projects.
I think it's four lanes to six, too.
Yeah, four lanes to six. Do we have that right up there? I'll get you that.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Senator Terrio.
So the Glen Highway corridor, it's all Matsuda Anchorage. It's none of the other Glen Highway to over to Glen Allen.
I believe there's some projects out there too, Senator Terrio. John, do you remember the Glen Highway project?
Yes, the Glen Highway project, we've got a much larger design study going on that covers the Glen Highway, where it goes from six lane down to four lane right by Merrill Field.
Right.
This one will address that one intersection where Pergaw crosses the Glen Highway, actually meets the Glen Highway, and the proposal is to put an interchange in there, a small diamond interchange with a single loop to get the traffic on and off the Glen Highway much more expeditiously. The next project down the line will take that stretch of Glen Highway as it goes by Merrill Field and six lane it.
Senator Terrio was asking about projects further out the Glen on east from Palmer and towards Glen Allen.
Commissioner? Yeah, I'm not sure what project that is.
Mr. Officer, won't you come on up to the.
Jeff Austin, Division of Program Development. Through the chair, Senator Terrio, we have several STIP projects on the remote sections of the Glen beyond Palmer. 92-97 will be the next piece to be constructed, starting in 06, and there's at least two other very deficient pieces of that highway that are in the design pipeline right now. Once we know what funding scenario is beyond 06, we'll be able to get those programmed.
Mr. Chairman, the 92-97, is that sort of the switchback or there's a real steep portion of the road as you head out towards Sutton?
Yes.
That a lot of work's been done on now. Is it just the surveying and clearing and whatnot?
It's a complete reconstruction, a realignment if necessary to meet a modern standard for width, grade, and alignment. It's been part of that NHS initiative that's been underway for about 10 years.
If I may. These are just the initiative projects. There are 100 more STIP projects, and we'll provide you all those maps, the whole ball of wax. But this is just a small portion of the whole program.
And then could you just touch on what the McCarthy Road project is?
Yes, the McCarthy Road project in the initiative is $2 million to do selective maintenance on selective spots along the road, the worst spots along the road. We do have also underway, though, an EIS for the entire road. And I believe that's due to, the EIS is due to be completed in 06. And that will look at the entire road and what the best solution for that is.
And one more. On the Anchorage Midtown congestion, I met with the Mayor Begich about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, to talk over the package there in Anchorage to get a better understanding. Have the traffic engineers, in particular out in the Lake Otis and Tudor area, looked at the when the Bregaw connection goes in, what amount of traffic might be diverted to that? The other projects that you have that are separate from the turn lane proposal there, and one of the concerns that I expressed to the mayor is that there's so many things proposed there, we don't know which combination gets us to the success and the reduction in congestion that everybody's hoping to get to. So do you have all of those things modeled separately so that you can click on, yes, let's do this one, and what does that do to the flow?
Yes, we have modeled that. Our traffic engineers have looked at that situation, and and the mayor, we know that the mayor feels very strongly about legalism and Tudor, and he and I have discussed that a number of times. We believe that the solution that we have proposed, which is the Bergaw, Dowling extension over to the Abbott's Bergaw new road, will take about 17,000 cars a day out of the Lake Otis and Tudor intersection. It will get the traffic levels back in that intersection to what they were in the late 80s. And we think that just allowing people to turn faster at Lake Otis and Tudor will only be about half of the improvement that what we have proposed is. Now, he's concerned also about safety at that intersection because of more recent developments and population growth. We're happy to take a look at that. We're asking to provide us all the information that we have.
Yeah, we have a map. Excuse me. We have a map here that's reflective of that.
The infamous map. I don't know if I'm smart enough to run this. Here's
get us oriented, Rick, because it's a little bit hard to.
I got to get to where I can see it with these glasses. I got to be straight on. There's Lake Otis and Tudor. Right there. And what we're proposing is to extend Dowling over to here. And this is one of the 2002 bond projects that extends Abbott Loop Road. We think the traffic will take this route around rather than what they currently do going through here. And as I indicated, we think this route will take 17,000 cars a day out of that intersection.
What's the demand on that intersection now? You know,
there's roughly 75,000 cars a day. But that would be, as I said, the 1988 traffic level. We did 17,000 out of it. There's lots of discussion about whether we're right or not, but that's the best judgment of our professional traffic engineers. They've looked at it pretty extensively.
Has there been discussions back and forth with the city's traffic engineers? Is there? I would imagine that most of this lends itself to some kind of formula review. There might be some, you know, difference of interpretation, but the math should be the math. What's it say?
Well, no, there's not agreement with the city traffic engineers. I'm not sure they dispute the 17,000 cars, but they feel strongly that this is a needed project.
And is that, have you plugged in projected growth and development in that area into your plan, and what would be left going through that intersection?
Well, it's the safety considerations that the mayor last we talked that he was concerned about because of the business development in that area and so forth. And quite frankly, I don't know the answer to your question.
Mr. Chairman, sort of the wrap-up of the discussion with the mayor that I had with the mayor, which was the first time I had that opportunity, is that from outside the city limits, it's a problem. It's a problem for Alaska citizens, so I want to do whatever needs to be done to fix the problem, but I don't want to spend any more money than necessary to fix the problem. And so my concern is that with so many things proposed all at once, you could spend all the money and sort of lose track on what combination really fixed the problem, and perhaps overspend on fixing the problem when you got other projects that go lacking of money or begging for money. So just trying to figure out, and I was hoping that there would be agreement with the traffic engineers on what should be done and how the timing should be so that we try and assure that we don't overspend.
Well, that have been suggested will not take any cars out of that intersection. They've got to have an alternative route if they're going to get cars out of the intersection. In terms of the safety improvements, that's a different issue, and we want to look at that, and I told the mayor that. I'm not sure why there are additional turning to address the safety issue.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that I quite understand all the development in that core healthcare area there. What additional office buildings, medical facilities are coming online that are going to increase the potential traffic through the intersection? And that, again, is part of my concern. If there's going to be somewhat, explosive growth there, and the turn lanes are just a sort of a stopgap to some kind of a elevated interchange, well, I'd rather at least consider, or maybe have the facts to consider, just go to the interchange if that's what you got to do, and don't spend the $10 to $15 million as a intermediary step.
In our view, that's all the turning lanes would have been an intermediary step. However, an interchange at that location is
very difficult.
Expensive, yeah. Very difficult thing to do. There are some developments. I think it's to the east. As well as a little closer to the interchange, and we've asked the mayor to please provide us with that information so we can look at it. Traffic engineering and traffic flows, you push it here and it pops out there type thing, so sometimes the most obvious answer is not the solution.
And Mr. Chairman, I know that for myself, even in Fairbanks, and we've got a few places that are choke points at drive time, I avoid them. If there's a route to get around it, I'll look for those routes. I'll search them out. It might take me a couple weeks to figure it out, but I'll look for those, and I think most drivers do. So it might take a little bit of time for people to figure out the alternative routes I want to get from point A to point B, and rather than go through the checkpoint, I'll go over here to get around it. But I think the drivers will do that, and my concern is that that we hopefully haven't got to the point with that particular proposal that's politicized to the point that, don't bother me with the facts. I signed the pledge card. I'll spend the money no matter what it costs. I'm from outside the city limits, but my vote counts just like anybody else on whether that money should be spent, and so I want to be bothered with the facts. So.
Well, and providing those alternative routes is what we're trying to do. And I have no doubt that the anchor driver will quickly find it.
So I had a very good, it was a good conversation with the mayor, and I just need to gather a little bit more information. They'll probably have some additional questions for him, too.
And my intent today was to give a departmental overview and not get into these projects. I fully expect that need to come down on this package as well as other projects that you're interested in.
Yeah, Mr. Barton, and that's the important thing that I think the committee wants to impress upon you is when we start looking at these projects, which is not too far down the line, that the business of qualifying the advantages and disadvantages is going to be important to each of us, because we want to do what's right. And I was there when you did the news conference on this particular piece, and as I listened to it, it made perfect sense, but it has to stand on its own merit, and you realize that. Other questions on that piece? Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Commissioner, could you just, short sentence or a short answer, can you give me what the north side of Merrifield is going to look like when the Glen Highway, I guess what's going to happen to the airport property on the north side of Merrill Field if the Glen Highway expansion goes on? What's it going to look like in 5 years, 10 years from now? Are you planning on taking by any domain or taking over the properties there?
I'm not sure that we finalized that, but we've looked at moving on. We've looked at a number of things, including going clear around the south side of Merrill Field and rejected that. We looked at encroaching on Merrill Field and determined that that's not going to be a viable option. So it will be to the north of Merrill Field. Right now we're talking about making it six lanes instead of four, and it will probably move over to the north, and there will be some right-of-way that's going to be needed over there. Another option that's been looked at is going over the hill and then coming back up. But I'm not sure the exact status of it.
For the most part, there are no immediate plans to go ahead and take over a portion of the property there for the airplane parking area or the frontage road, is it?
Not on Merrill Field.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Barton, at this point in time, it is 25 minutes until the hour. Let's take a five-minute break. And for those that are standing by for Senate Bill 85, I would presume that we will get no further than introducing it if that happens, and that's highly unlikely. So we all have the same expectation. please. Okay, other questions for Commissioner Barton on bond projects proposed?
Okay. This is the highway bill reauthorization. I don't know what to say other than the good news is that Congressman Young introduced his new bill today and hopes to have it out of committee by the 2nd and on the floor by the 7th. It's not 1,000 pages any longer, it's 700, so it will be simpler, presumably. But
is it that much lighter on money?
Well, the spin doesn't have it any lighter. The devil's in the details. There's a couple major issues that have been hanging that bill up. And one is what's known as the donor donee issue, and that's the states that send more in a federal gas tax than they get back are known as donors. And we're a donee. We're a very successful donee. The delegation is, the congressional delegation work very hard. We get almost $6 back for every dollar we send in. And the next highest is the District of Columbia at 3. And it goes down from there. But right now, the donors are guaranteed 92% of what they send in. And they're getting tired of sending money to the donee states, and they're going to raise the bill, will raise that to 95%, and that could have an adverse impact on our funding. Depends on what the total spending cap is in the bill. If it's high enough, then it won't reduce us probably, but if it isn't, we could see some impacts in that discussion. That's probably one of the biggest things that's been hanging that bill. If that process has started,
Mr. Commissioner, does this have a major impact on Connect Crossing, Kibata?
Well, in the last Congress's version, there were earmarks for Kibata, I think $200 million for the Connect Bridge. There was an earmark for the Gravina Bridge, I think that $175 million, though you had to hunt through there to find it all. And I don't know whether it's in this Congress's bill, the bill that just got introduced. I don't know where that money is. There's a concern, too, about earmarking, and the leadership is wanting to discourage it. And one of the ways that they have thought about using to discourage it is to make that money deductible from each state's allocation. And all the money being earmarked in the last Congress's version of this thing then deducted from our normal formula programs, it would have been about a 30% hit. Next one. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to respond to further questions and get out of here, whatever your pleasure.
Question? Senator French?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Barton, we talked at the break. I mentioned that I was curious about a subject that was impacts my district, it impacts the whole state really, and that's the big upgrade we recently did to the Ted Stevens Airport, adding the new concourse and so forth. Concourse looks beautiful, I think everybody agrees it's a work of art, but it costs substantially more in the end than was anticipated at the beginning. And I remember there being some discussion about the time that was completed that that these cost overruns were going to get looked into and investigated. And as I recall, they were in the tens of millions of dollars, maybe over $100 million. And I'm just curious whether that investigation's been done, whether there's been any analysis of how it is we went from a project that was going to cost, and you can supply the figures, but it was going to cost X number of dollars and actually wound up costing X plus tens of millions more.
And I'd be happy to provide those, Senator, but there was some analysis, considerable analysis done on that. There was three major factors involved in the overrun. One was related to 9/11 and the post 9/11 TSA requirements, which we had to incorporate into Concourse C construction. The second was the addition of considerable square footage at the request of the airline. I think it was 80,000 square feet or something like that, or not an insignificant amount. And the third source of the overruns was in the permitting processes. Very early on, and the delays in getting the permits, and then the subsequent impacts of just the delays, as well as some design changes that resulted from that permitting process. So I was happy to get you that information. Remember that this is all financed through the enterprise fund, which is the source of those revenues are generated from the airline. So there was no impact in terms of the state's general fund from that. But it's a situation that we don't want to see recurring. When we redo A and B, we're going to use a completely different approach. Our intent at the moment is to go into A and B with the process known as the construction manager at risk, so we get a guaranteed maximum price before we sign any papers. We're going to use a different management scheme in terms of managing the project. But I'll be happy to get those numbers for you.
I would like to see those, and I'm just particularly interested in the permitting aspect. Some of the news reports, I don't know how accurate they are or not, but some of the news reports indicated that some of the work got started without having the permits in hand, and that's something that's troubled me for some time. And so I'd be interested in knowing what information you have on that.
Sure. I'll provide that, and that's accurate, but that's not an unusual practice.
And one other question. Senator French. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned earlier in the presentation that you were having trouble recruiting, and maybe you could just elaborate a little bit on that and let us know sort of what the manpower shortage is and what the specific areas, that is, what are you learning as you find that it's difficult to recruit? Is it salaries? Is it benefits? Is it relocation? Is it all of the above? Why is it that you're having trouble hiring folks for what a lot of people think are plum state jobs?
Sure, they're all plum state jobs, but we're having problems essentially across the board. There are some areas in which it's more chronic than others. The big part of the problem is that we're no longer competitive in the marketplace itself. I'm not sure how to submit it to some of the other aspects, but I think it's slightly different places.
Is that compared to other public employers? Like, are they going to other states to find this kind of work, or are they going straight to the private sector?
I think private sectors, there may be some other states, though, that have a more competitive salary scale than we do that may be attracting them as well. But we have 31% of our engineers eligible to retire in the next 5 years. And I don't have it. Yeah, and 19% of our recruitment efforts on engineers fail. Just fail. And I think that's just going to get worse until we address the issue. And I don't think DOT is unique, frankly. But that's somebody else's concern. I'm just worried about DOT. But it's a problem. You know, in some of the salary comparisons, the ASHTO, which is the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials, puts out, they compile this state by state and put out the statistics. It looks like that DOT in Alaska is not competitive at the higher salary levels. At the lower salary levels, they are, but not at the higher salary levels. And that information is a year old. They're trying to fix it, compile it, and so forth. But that's what the ASHTO survey would show. Higher salary level, we don't have it. And that's been my personal experience in trying to recruit for the department.
Thank you. Mr. Commissioner, when it comes to retiree rehire,
yes,
are you supportive, or is that part of the solution, or have you thought about it?
Yes, to all of the above, we use it. It is part of the solution, but it just postpones the problem. But we have a number of people now in key positions that agreed to come back from retirement because they were able to do so under that bill. And should that go away, that would just compound the problem that I was talking about.
Okay. What is DOT's operation relationship with Kubota?
Kubota is within the umbrella of DOT, I think the best characterization would be they would be similar to a region. And there was Henry Springer, the executive director of DOT, reports to me.
So it's just a compressed project region kind of relationship?
Yeah, but it has a lot of unique features, of course, that the regions don't have. And, you know, it, quite honestly, it's a hybrid organization. They have a lot of authorities and powers that our regions don't have, which, you know, as a result of the enabling legislation.
Right. When we hold our meeting in Wasilla to talk about and look up close at that and hear the information, are there some things that we should try to bring out that you would encourage us information-wise that's important for the members to hear and the public?
Let me think about that. It's a unique organization within DOT, within the state.
I think there's at least two projects that are on the drawing boards proposed that potentially would encompass de-icing on roads or anti-icing. Could you give us a 30-second burst on what that really means?
Yeah, I can, and perhaps Jeff can elaborate or correct me. But an example is the bridge there is where the old plant takes off. There are a number of innovative anti-icing techniques, but one of which is that you have sensors built in to the system, either in the bridge decks or on the sides that detect when you need anti-ice, and then that automatically triggers, for example, a spray system that's built into the sides of the bridge. and that comes on and sprays fluid and takes care of the problem. We're looking at that, and we're I think we've got a project to install that, don't we? How much?
The short answer is yes. There's a project in this step to look at several technical solutions to the problems in the Mat-Su commute corridor. Fog sensors, so that when we have periods of fog, we can reduce speed limits with variable speed limit signs. This anti-icing system on the bridges, which would use atmospheric and bridge deck sensors to identify the right times to turn those systems on. And then more ways to communicate to the public what the driving conditions are, particularly when they're adverse or when there's an accident, so that they have some expectations about that drive.
Other question for the commission? Well, on behalf of the committee, we say thank you for your presentation, and at least for me, and I think I can speak for the other committee members, the amount of money that we're looking at in the future for projects, be it resources or congestion or just requirements that we're catching up on, we have an appetite for looking at some of those projects so that we can represent them well, and we can cull those that for whatever reason don't meet the appetite of the committee as we look at it. But we certainly appreciate your presentation. Very much helpful to me.
We look forward to satisfying your appetite, and be happy to come down and discuss any of these projects anytime. The transportation needs of this state are staggering, particularly relative to the amount of money we're able to invest in the solutions.
Right. And in that respect, I'm going to go up into Senator Terrio's backyard to the University of Alaska Fairbanks and look at their lab they have at the paving process potential to get familiar, if nothing else. But once again, thank you very much, Commissioner Barton. We appreciate it very much, Mr. Austin. And those online, we say thank you, too. It was the intent of the chair to bring forward Senate Bill 85. Unfortunately, time has expired, so those scheduled or previously heard will be carried forward to the next meeting. This meeting is adjourned.